You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox from Bears Wire and Pro Football Focus, bringing you in-depth and entertaining Chicago Bears analysis. Football is officially back, and so today on the podcast, we'll be recapping the Hall of Fame game between the Bears and the Baltimore Ravens, breaking down the players that stood out while also trying to cut back a little bit on some of the overreaction from one preseason game that didn't really feature starters and really had a lot of, I guess, ugly football. But we'll talk about the guys who impressed me, some of the guys that I thought really didn't hurt themselves, and also just some of the other interesting player usage questions that the Bears kind of left with some guys playing, some guys not, some guys playing only a little bit, and a couple guys playing a lot. And we'll kind of just give a holistic recap and analysis of what we saw on the field Thursday night. Before we get into some of the players on the field, let's talk about some of the guys that we didn't see. You know, I was really looking forward to seeing what Kevin White would do in this game, and he gets the night off with the rest of the, you know, the starters and the veterans, and throw Anthony Miller right here in this category. Two exciting wide receivers that need experience in this offense, and neither one gets the opportunity to see the field. And that was pretty disappointing and a little bit head-scratching, in my opinion. You know, I understand you want to mitigate your injury risk, but it's not, we're not talking about playing these guys for the full, I think, 75 snaps was what the Bears offense played last night. You know, get them on the field for a drive or two. Let's see Kevin White catch passes against real defenders in this new offense. Let's see that speed. Let's see some of the things that he's reportedly shown at training camp. Even Matt Nagy himself has said, you know, we like what White's doing, but he's got to do it in real game action now. Why doesn't he get any real game action then? You know, if that's what you want to see with him to take that next step, I'm not quite sure why they don't give him the shot. I mean, maybe it's a confidence thing that say, you know what, hey, Kevin, we're going to sit you out with the rest of these starters because we're confident in you and we like you and see you're with the big boys and you're not necessarily fighting as much for the scraps with everybody else. So, you know, this is our show of confidence in you. But, you know, I could also kind of take it on the other side of the spectrum. Like, if you're Kevin White, don't you want every opportunity to get out on the field and not only show the Bears what you can do, but show 31 other teams what you can do for your impending free agency at the end of this season, or even if he doesn't make the 53-man roster at the end of training camp? And maybe the Bears are sitting there thinking, well, Kevin, you get hurt so damn much, we don't want to put you out there and risk you injuring yourself again in this extra fifth meaningless preseason game where starters won't even play anyway, so we're just going to try and play it safe with you because we don't trust your ability to stay healthy. I mean, that doesn't seem like the likely explanation, but, you know, if you're Kevin White, why aren't you out there? Why aren't you fighting to be out there unless, you know, he's dealing with something else and they just want to be extra cautious with his health or something? I mean, I don't know. Doesn't really totally add up there. And really, both of the second-round picks, Anthony Miller and James Daniels, I thought they really should have been out there. You know, Miller is a guy that has also been impressing at Bears training camp, catching a lot of passes and really showing off that route running that was his calling card at Memphis. So I understand being encouraged with him and not wanting to force him out there in these kind of situations. But again, this is a guy that needs live game reps against a real opponent, against NFL caliber players. You know, it's one thing when you're just beating up on the Bears backups and the third string cornerbacks there, but let's go against the Ravens where they do have a little bit of a deeper secondary and they're just a different opponent that Miller hasn't been able to go up against every day and learn the tendencies of and kind of find those ways to beat them. It's just it's a new environment. It's a live game situation. It'd be valuable to have him on the field, but I have a feeling with Miller, they're trying to kind of do the Tariq Cohen thing from last year and keep him a little bit of a secret throughout the preseason and kind of slowly unveil him as the season goes on to be a little bit more of a secret weapon. And then with James Daniels, I know he had a shoulder injury that he suffered at training camp earlier this week, so I'm guessing that's probably 100% of the reason he was not there, so I'm not going to hold that against him or the Bears in any regard, but just disappointing that we didn't get a chance to see him, again, in a live game situation that is more valuable even for offensive linemen who don't always get to go full contact and hit the opponents they're practicing against during practice and training camp. Would like to see how he handled the Baltimore Ravens defensive line, particularly with how most of the Bears offensive line struggled in the game, which I know we're going to get to in a little bit. Would have liked to see him and see just how far behind he is from a guy like Eric Kush. You know, Daniels continues to work with the backups at guard and center and seems to still be a decent way away from that starting lineup. And this injury certainly slows down that trajectory even further. And again, a preseason game appearance can go a long way toward impressing your coaching staff. For the most part, the defensive absences made sense. I mean, you didn't want to put any of your big-name starters out there, and Kwiatkowski's a starter at inside linebacker, so you don't really play him, and none of your starting secondary. But in terms of that defensive backfield, a couple of guys I would have liked to see. One, Kevin Tolliver II, who was a really early star of Bears training camp. I believe he had a couple of interceptions in the first few practices. I think he is dealing with some kind of minor injury as well, so that could be why they didn't want to force him out there. But the other one was John Franklin III, the developmental cornerback prospect of Last Chance U fame. He was a quarterback initially in college, transferred and transferred again, and I played, I believe, at four schools in 4 years. Played wide receiver at the end there at Florida Atlantic. Then in the draft process, the Seahawks first started him and started working him out at the cornerback position, and then when he came to Chicago, he was at rookie minicamp and did enough to earn a roster spot there. A guy with legitimate, like, 4.3 40-yard dash speed, a prolific track runner even during his college career, but the cornerback position is not so much a straight-line speed track player position. It's a very technically based and short area quickness, fluidity in your hips and quick feet. And so it's obviously going to be a potentially difficult and long transition for Franklin to make that switch to yet another new position and his first position on the other side of the ball. So he's a guy that needs game experience as much as anybody else. They gave plenty of reps to, you know, Doran Grant and I believe Jonathan Mincy and certainly DeAndre Hall and Cravon LeBlanc and some of these other guys, but I don't know if Franklin maybe has an injury that hasn't been reported or if this is just kind of a bigger sign overall that he's not ready for game experience yet and certainly would have then no shot at the 53-man roster. Now, if you're like me, you were watching this Hall of Fame game at home on your couch, you know, kind of like a typical Thursday or Sunday. Don't you wish you could have been in Canton to see the Bears in person? Well, thanks to Locked On Bears, we can get you a special deal on tickets to a Bears game of your choice with our friends at Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is an online event ticket marketplace dedicated to providing fans with experiences that'll last a lifetime. We can get you 10% off your first ticket order with Vivid Seats if you go to their website or download the app and enter the promo code Locked On. I'm looking at the app on my phone right now. You can get tickets to the Bears-Chiefs third preseason game, the first one at Soldier Field, for literally $20 a ticket. And, of course, they still have tickets available for Week 1 in Green Bay against the Packers. Those will run you a little bit more. But with this special deal for Locked On Bears listeners, you get 10% off your ticket purchase. Just download the app or go to vividseats.com and enter that promo code Locked On for 10% off. That's valid only for your first order, and that ticket code only is good through the end of August. So check out Vivid Seats today, use that promo code Locked On, and get 10% off your Bears tickets thanks to Locked On Bears. Today on Locked On Bears, we're talking through Thursday night's Hall of Fame game, and I want to get to now some of the players that I think overreaction has started to run rampant on a little bit, sort of the big names from the game. And let's start with the man under center, at least to start, Chase Daniel. obviously, he did not have a strong performance from the quarterback position. I believe he finished, what, 8 of 16 for, boy, less than 100 yards, and really just not giving you a lot of great quarterback play. You know, had the two interceptions, one of which was clearly not his fault. It hit the helmet of, I believe, Jordan Morgan and bounced up in the air and was picked off by a Ravens defender. But then his second one was just pretty poorly off target to Deion Sims. Not sure if there was a miscommunication about the route there, but still, the defender was clearly to the inside. He threw it to where the defender was, regardless of whether Sims was going to be there or not. It was just didn't seem like a very smart decision at all from the backup quarterback, the veteran backup quarterback. And so, of course, whenever Chase Daniel plays or takes the field or is even mentioned on a broadcast, everyone's quick to talk about, well, look at how much money he's made over his career and how few pass attempts. You know, I think he's 1-1 as a starter in what I think 7 years in the NFL. I mean, there's plenty of reasons to kind of bag on the guy, and there's certainly no sugarcoating the performance he had last night. But let's just keep it into perspective that this was the first half of a preseason game with all backups in his first time as a member of the Bears. I mean, yes, he knows Matt Nagy's offense, and we all were, and were justifiably so, expecting better from Chase Daniel. But, you know, I've seen people say, well, the Bears wouldn't even win a game if Chase Daniel was their starting quarterback. And that's a little ridiculous. That's a bit much. I mean, this guy was throwing to Benny Fowler, Josh Bellamy, Marlon Brown. I mean, guys that should never be on offense and might not be even on the 53-man roster. And his offensive line with undrafted free agents and, you know, just a hodgepodge of players couldn't really give him much time to pass the ball and time to work out of the pocket. His running backs weren't really giving him that much. I mean, yes, maybe these sound like excuses, but we're talking about a backup quarterback here. Chase Daniel isn't going to win you a lot of games if you don't give him time to throw and players who can catch the ball and players who can run the ball. And he didn't have those in the Hall of Fame game. He was really working with the scrubs, and, you know, that doesn't mean he shouldn't have been more accurate with his passes, and it was a terrible performance, don't get me wrong, but I'm not ready to bail on Chase Daniel and say, well, maybe Tyler Bray should be the backup quarterback. Let's hold off on that a little bit. I think if we saw Chase Daniel with Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, Tariq Cohen, Jordan Howard, Trey Burton, and, hello, a starting offensive line, I think you'd see a guy that could at least move the offense downfield a little bit and probably put some points on the board. Maybe not 35 and single-handedly win you the game, but certainly I think you can win games if you have a strong supporting cast around Chase Daniel. And it was a bad look, a bad first impression, but it's no reason to crucify the guy just yet. On the flip side, everybody has been pretty quick to crown Javon Wims the one wide receiver and really probably the one offensive player, period, that stood out in a positive way in that Hall of Fame game. He led the team, I believe, with 7 catches for 89 yards off the top of my head. And that was an encouraging performance for a 7th-round pick. You know, a guy, we got to see his size and jump ball ability there. I believe at the beginning of the 4th quarter, down that left sideline, kind of did the back shoulder fade with maybe a slight push off that doesn't get called if you're good at it, like Javon Wims was. And really, really encouraging performance from a guy that's trying to compete for a 53-man roster spot. But at the same time, I come back to the same reasoning. It's one preseason game against Baltimore Ravens third-string players, and by no means do I feel like Javon Wims locked himself into a roster spot with that one game. I mean, we saw guys last year like Trey McBride have some pretty big games, and even like Tanner Gentry, these guys that you're like, oh man, this is going to be, they're going to be a real part of this offense this year. And of course, that doesn't happen because it's preseason against backups. Like with Wims's performance in particular, you look for the traits. You look for the, okay, that was a nice high point jump ball ability. You saw solid hands. You saw some ability to separate, which was an issue from his time at Georgia. But boy, it's a lot different separating from, boy, no name guys. I'll name a couple from the Ravens that he was up against, and you probably won't know who any of them are. You know, Darius Williams, Anthony Averett, Jackson Porter, Chris Board. I mean, I could have made up those four names, and I don't think it would make much of a difference for people. But this is not going up against, you know, Jimmy Smith and Marlon Humphrey and Ladarius Webb and some of the starters that the Ravens have, or even Kyle Fuller and Prince Amukamara. You know, it's much easier for a guy like this to utilize his special, or I guess his rare physical traits to separate against a scrub than it is to separate against a veteran starting quality cornerback that knows how to deal with players of his size. So totally encouraged by what Wims did in this game, but he's a guy that will make or miss this 53-man roster almost purely based on his ability to contribute on special teams. Certainly, if all things are close on special teams, that he'd get the leg for his ability to contribute offensively, but when you're talking about your fifth, sixth wide receiver on your depth chart, he's got to be a special teams guy, and that's the Josh Bellamy role, that's the Benny Fowler role. Again, even though they drop some passes sometimes, they're good special teams players, and that's too valuable for this fifth and sixth spot. Like to see the encouragement from Javon Wims, but let's see more special teams. Let's see him do it against a higher quality of player, and then we can start to crown him the steal of the draft. And the other big name contributors, or at least the contributors in the spotlight for that Hall of Fame game, were the pass rushers, Isaiah Irving and Kylie Fitts in particular. And I talked on this podcast about how excited I was to see what Irving would do. I liked some of what I saw. You know, the obviously, you know, the sack and the forced fumble that was called back by a penalty, those were good to see. You know, I thought that second sack, the one that actually counted, I mean, it's a good play, it's a highlight, but he was unblocked. He just ran around the outside, and the offensive tackle either didn't see him or was occupied with someone else and thought the running back was supposed to pick it up. But, you know, I'm not going to crown Isaiah Irving just yet for an unblocked sack there, but I was much more encouraged by the play where he was offsides, then jumped back, or tried to jump back onsides, was then late off the snap as a result, put a nice outside move on the tackle, got to the quarterback, got his hand up, and hit the ball. I believe it was RG3 at the time, hit the ball out of RG3's hands, and was a nice sack force fumble that ultimately didn't count, but plays like that, I think, were much more encouraging from him. And, you know, Kylie Fitts, a similar thing, a nice sack from him and got to the quarterback a few times, but was a little bit disappointed with how he handled himself in the run defense. You know, he wasn't getting totally blown out of the way, but just wasn't as firm setting an edge all the time. There was one or two that kind of stood out, but a few times, you know, especially if he got caught on a double team with a tackle and a guard or a tackle and a tight end, just wasn't really able to hold his own a few times and didn't see as many of those positive impact plays in run defense. And again, for both of them, preseason game against backup offensive linemen. And this Ravens backup offensive line looked horrible. I mean, the Bears had 9 different guys reach the quarterback for officially 8 total sacks. I mean, you know, you're seeing Jonathan Bullard, Roy Robertson-Harris, Kylie Fitts, Isaiah Irving, Abdullah Anderson, Nick Williams, Bilal Nichols, Kevon Walker, and I believe Elijah Norris all getting their hands on the quarterback at some point in this game. To me, that kind of devalues some of the bigger name guys when, again, Abdullah Anderson and Elijah Norris, these guys that aren't going to be on an NFL team this season, when they can beat these offensive linemen for a sack, to me, it's a little bit less impressive when, you know, Jonathan Bullard does or Roy Robertson-Harris does, but that doesn't detract the positive traits and the, I guess, the repeatable aspects of those plays. But I guess from a statistics standpoint, you know, you don't want to get too caught up in the production there. Really encouraged that these younger pass rushers did show up, but I guess it's in a game like this, it's more checking the box there than going totally above and beyond. You know, if Irving had 3 sacks and was just play after play after play dominating the offensive line, then you're like, wow, okay, this guy needs to be up there playing against the starters. But he had a nice game, not an all-world game. And same with Kylie Fitts as a pass rusher. Nice game, not totally game changer in this game. It was a collective pass rush success. So encouraging start, but not ready to say either one of them is ready for this huge breakout season just yet. Now, those were obviously just kind of the big names that everybody's been talking about and everybody at home saw. But coming up next on Locked On Bears, we'll break down some of the other guys that maybe flew under the radar a little bit more for their both positive or negative performances. And we'll wrap up with kind of a more general look at the snap counts from Pro Football Focus. We'll talk about the guys that played quite a bit and the guys that did see the field but really didn't play all that much. Keep it locked here on Locked On Bears. We're breaking down the Hall of Fame game today on the podcast, and I want to touch on a couple of notable performances that stood out to me before we move on to some snap count numbers as far as who got the most opportunities and who really didn't. We talked a little bit about this offensive line with James Daniels not being out there and Chase Daniel not having a lot of help. And boy, some of that issue really came at the left tackle spot. Bradley Soule, who I have been highly critical of on this podcast for literally a year now, he struggled once again, sort of as you might expect. According to the Pro Football Focus pressure numbers, he allowed one sack, two hits, and one hurry on really only a limited number of snaps from that left tackle position. He was the starter, and he pass blocked for 18 pass blocking snaps. Giving up four pressures on 18 pass blocking snaps is a pretty terrible conversion right there. You know, offensive tackles do tend to give up more pressures than guards, so it you know, there's a waiting there, like a waiting there as far as how much that those are valued, but still not a strong performance from the blind side there. Behind him, Brandon Green came in the game for really five total snaps, gave up a pretty terrible sack, and then was more or less yanked after that. I don't know if he was hurt or something and came out, but then Matt McCants came in and was exceedingly average and didn't really do a whole lot there. Also on the offensive line, I thought Eric Kush was far and away the best player up front. I guess he was the only quote-unquote starter to play in this game. Started at center, and because James Daniels is hurt and Ronis Grassu is hurt, so you know, I thought from that interior spot he was solid. Didn't give up any protection issues in the passing game, and in the running game, you know, wasn't blowing anybody up, but seemed to kind of hold his own on the interior. Felt like a lot of runs ended up getting bounced out to the outside, but certainly didn't feel like that was much the fault of Eric Kush. And I thought he did a pretty good job of just kind of re-solidifying why he's in the starting lineup and why he's still ahead of James Daniels, who obviously didn't even get the chance to show his development. And real quick, on the other side of the ball, a couple of quick standouts. DeAndre Hall, I thought, had a solid game at the safety position. They moved him around a little bit and let him play some in the box and even a little bit in the slot for some single high looks, and really held his own in coverage. I think he had like one total target in the whole game on 27 coverage snaps. Really just seemed to lock down his area of the field wherever he was in zone. Targeted twice, gave up one catch for 1 yard to Vince Male of the Ravens. Just thought he looked solid in coverage and, you know, didn't really make any big plays in the running game, but wasn't out of place or a liability in that area at all. Also should mention Doran Grant for his interception. That was a real nice play in one-on-one coverage there. Certainly a late ball from Lamar Jackson that gave him a shot to go get it, but I think you'd see a lot of bottom-of-the-roster guys really fail to take advantage of that type of an opportunity, and he really stepped up and delivered there. To wrap up here, I want to just touch briefly on some snap count notables. On offense, Rashad Coward and Jordan Morgan played the entire game. All 75 snaps they were on the field. I believe Morgan was at left guard for all of them, and Rashad Coward was at right tackle for all of them. Neither one was phenomenal, but I was impressed with how well Coward was able to hold his own. You know, I think there were some very clear technical, I don't know if issues is the right word because it worked for him, but things in his technique that you would like to change in an ideal world, but it worked against Ravens backup pass rushers and run defenders. You know, he's bending at his waist way too much, and you saw him give up a couple pressures that way. But for a guy that was playing defensive line 6 months ago and is still learning this position, to be the starting, or I guess, you know, the backup, but starter in this game at right tackle was impressive. And I think his development is really starting to come along a lot better than I thought it would. And Jordan Morgan at left guard, some struggles there in pass protection, still a very raw prospect. Not really doing a lot in the running game for me either, but, you know, not totally horrible, but just maybe not as much development from him as you would have liked to see for a guy coming into his second year in the NFL. But again, for both of them, one preseason game against backups. We're not overreacting to anybody. No roster spots have been won or lost. Defensively, the cornerback Michael Joseph out of Dubuque actually played the most snaps of any player. He wasn't out there with the starters. I believe it was Crevon LeBlanc and Marcus Cooper that were the starting cornerbacks for the game, but Joseph played the most snaps and did a pretty decent job. He missed two tackles in the game and gave up a couple catches in coverage, but for a guy that was out there so much, I think it was incredibly valuable experience for him. And, you know, maybe that either says a lot that the team really wants to see what he could do because they like him, or maybe they feel like, okay, we need to see what he can do because we're not sure if we want to keep him around. But either way, I thought it was a pretty decent showing for that guy and certainly didn't look too overwhelmed from making the jump to the NFL from Dubuque. And then the other defensive player that played the most, one snap fewer than Michael Joseph, was Jonathan Anderson at inside linebacker, and specifically at inside linebacker. You know, the Bears' official roster lists him as an outside linebacker, but he was on the inside the whole time and is not apparently headed for the Christian Jones hybrid linebacker role. He's there on the inside. He and John Timu played most of the game there. DeAndre Houston Carson also played quite a bit at safety, and DeAndre Hall as well. But those were kind of the top snap getters defensively, and gives you some impression that the Bears are trying to get a longer look at what those guys can do on the field. And just a couple quick guys that didn't play that much. Jonathan Mincy, the somewhat veteran cornerback who was brought in this offseason on a futures deal. He's been around for a few years. He played a total of six snaps in this game, and offensively, really didn't see much of Adam Shaheen. He was out there for 11 snaps. Would have liked to see more from him and really be able to be more physically imposing and just kind of take over this preseason game, but I'm sure they're kind of stashing him and storing him for more significant preseason action with the starters. And then running back Taquan Mizell. Would have liked to see him and Ryan Nall have more of a split so we can just see what Mizell does. But Nall got 40 snaps, Mizell got 18, clearly trying to get a longer look at the undrafted free agent. And I suppose that makes sense since Taquan has been with the team since last September. They might have a better understanding of what he can do in these kind of situations, but Nall, not as much. Hopefully this podcast did a decent job of bringing expectations back to normal a little bit and reaction back to this baseline level of not overreacting too much to what we saw in the Hall of Fame game. For another episode of Locked On Bears here, I want to try something new with you, the loyal listeners of this show. You know, with Brian Urlacher going into the Hall of Fame this weekend, I want to do a podcast that looks back a little bit more over his career. And to do so, I need your help. You specifically listening to this podcast, I want to get your voices on Locked On Bears. So what we've done here is we've set up a voicemail line that will allow you to call in and leave a message for Locked On Bears. And if you call in, you're consenting for us to record it and put it on our show. And so what I would like to do is have you call in and tell me about your favorite memory of Brian Urlacher. And I would ask that maybe you pick something other than that Arizona Cardinals game that everybody talks about with Brian Urlacher, because if we get 20 people calling in all talking about that same game, it, you know, it doesn't really add a lot to the conversation. But I would appreciate if you had a specific memory from a game, or maybe you met Brian Urlacher somewhere and got to talk to him. Any memories of a beloved Chicago Bears legend as he prepares for his Hall of Fame enshrinement. I'd like to put it all together for a Brian Urlacher appreciation podcast and get some of the fan voices involved here. So give us a call at Locked On Bears. The phone number for our voicemail line is 312-620-8590. For now, just keep it to these Brian Urlacher memories, but I'm sure in the near future, we will go back into this voicemail line and create some more opportunities for you, the loyal Locked On Bears listeners, to get involved with the show. Again, that phone number is 312-620-8590. I look forward to getting your Brian Urlacher voicemails, and then you'll be able to hear yourself on the Locked On Bears show. Like I said, we'll be honoring him for his Hall of Fame enshrinement, and I'm hoping we can get a nice variety of voices and stories about just a universally loved linebacker from the Chicago Bears. That should be a fun and a little bit different style of Locked On Bears podcasts coming to you up next. I know I promised, or maybe not fully promised, I know we talked about trying to wrap up the season previews. Got the 49ers guy on the way. We'll get to that next week for the last look ahead at the Bears schedule. We'll be talking all sorts of training camp storylines and the latest and greatest out of Bourbonnais before, boy, another round of preseason games. It's coming right back up. Football season is officially here. Hope you'll keep it locked here on Locked On Bears, because we're finally at the time of year where we can bear down.